today we're going to be talking about Anne Frank. And my favorite quote that she said is, "I keep my ideals because in spite of everything, I still believe that people are really good at art." Okay, so Anne Frank was born Annalise or Annalise Marie Frank on June 12, 1929 at the Maingau Red Cross Clinic in Frankfurt, Germany, to Edith and Otto Heinrich Frank. She had an older sister, Margot, and the Franks were liberal Jews and did not observe all of the customs and traditions of Judaism. They lived in an assimilated community of Jewish and non-Jewish citizens of various religions. Edith and Otto were devoted parents who were interested in scholarly pursuits and had an extensive library. Both parents encouraged the children to read. At the time of Anne's birth, the family lived in a house at Marbachweg 307 in Frankfurt Dornbusch, where they rented two floors. In 1931, the family moved to Ganghoferstrasse 24 in a fashionable liberal area of Dornbusch called the Dichterviertel, Poets Quarter. Both houses still exist. In 1933, after Adolf Hitler's Nazi Party won the federal election and Adolf Hitler was appointed the Chancellor of the Reich, Edith Frank and her children went to stay with Edith's mother Rosa in Aachen. Otto Frank remained in Frankfurt, but after receiving an offer to start a company in Amsterdam, he moved there to organize the business and to arrange accommodations for his family. He began working with the Opecta Works, a company that sold the fruit extract pectin. Edith traveled back and forth between Aachen and Amsterdam and found an apartment on Merwed Square, in the Rivière en Bert neighborhood of Amsterdam, where more Jewish German refugees settled. In late December 1933, Edith followed her husband together with Margot. Anne stayed with her grandmother until February, when the family was reunited in the Netherlands. The Franks were among 300,000 Jews who fled Germany between 1933 and 1939. After moving to Amsterdam, Anne and Margot Frank were enrolled in school, Margot in public school and Anne in a Montessori school. Despite initial problems with the Dutch language, Margot became a star pupil in Amsterdam, and Anne soon felt at home at the Montessori school and met children of her own age, like Hannah Gosler, who would later become one of her best friends. In 1938, Otto Frank started a second company, Pecticon, which was a wholesaler of herbs, picking salts, and mixed spices used in production of sausages. Herman van Pels was employed by Pecticon as an advisor about spices. A Jewish butcher, he had fled Osnabrück with his family. In 1939, Edith Frank's mother came to live with the Franks and remained with them until her death in January 1942. In May 1940, Germany invaded the Netherlands and the occupation government began to prosecute Jews by the implementation of restrictive and discriminatory laws. Mandatory registration and segregation soon followed. Otto Frank tried to arrange the family to emigrate to the United States, the only destination that seemed to him to be viable. But Frank's application for a visa was never processed due to circumstances such as the closing of the U.S. consulate in Rotterdam and the loss of all the paperwork there, including the visa application. Even if it had been processed, the U.S. government at the time was concerned that people with close relatives still in Germany could be blackmailed into becoming Nazi spies. For her 13th birthday on June 12, 1942, Anne received a book she had brought with her father and mother in a shop sometime earlier. It was an autograph book bound with red and white checkered cloth and with a small lock on the front. Frank decided she would use it as a diary, and she began writing in it almost immediately. In her entry dated June 20th, 1942, she lists many of the restrictions placed upon the lives of the Dutch Jewish population. Otto and Edith Frank planned to go into hiding with the children July 16th, 1942, but when Margot received a call-up notice from the Zentrastel für Jüdische Auswanderung, Central Office for Jewish Emigration, on July 5th, ordering her to report for relocation to a work camp, they were forced to move the plan 10 days forward. Shortly before going into hiding, Anne gave her friend and neighbor, Tuge Coopers, a book a tea set, and a tin of marbles. On July 6th, the Fink family left a note for the Coopers, asking them to take care of their cat, Morge, I think? As the Associated Press reports, "I'm worried about my marbles because I'm scared they might fall into the wrong hands," Cooper said. Anne told her, "Could you keep them for me for a while?" On the morning of July 6th, 1942, the Frank family moved into their hiding place. A three-story space entered from a landing above the Opecta offices on the Prinzengracht, where some of Otto Frank's most trusted employees would be their helpers. This hiding place became known as the Achterwies, translated into secret annex in English editions of the diary. Their apartment was left in a state of disarray to create the impression that they had left suddenly, and Otto left a note that hinted that they were going to Switzerland. The need for secrecy forced them to leave behind Anne's cat, Morge. As Jews were not allowed to use public transport, they walked several kilometers from their home. The door to the Achterwies was later covered by a bookcase to ensure it remained undiscovered. Victor Kugler, Johannes Kleiman, Miep Gies, and Foskuli were the only employees who knew of the people in hiding. Along with Gies's husband, Jan Gies, and Volkuli's father, Johann Hendrik Voskil, they were the helpers for the duration of their confinement. The only connection between the outside world and the occupants of the house, they kept the occupants informed of war news and political developments. They catered to all of their needs, ensured their safety, and supplied them with food, a task that grew more difficult with the passage of time. Frank wrote of their dedication and their efforts to boost their morale within the household during the most dangerous of times. All were aware that if caught, they could face death penalty for sheltering Jews. On July 13, 1942, the Franks were joined by the Van Pels, made up of Hermann, August, and 16-year-old Peter, and then in November by Fritz Pfeffer, a dentist in front of the family. Frank wrote of her pleasure at having new people to talk to, but tensions quickly developed within the group, forced to live in such confined conditions. After sharing her room with Pfeffer, she found him to be insufferable and resented his intrusion, and she clashed with August Van Pels, whom she regarded as foolish. She regarded Hermann Van Pels and Fritz Pfeffer as selfish, particularly in regard to the amount of food they consumed. Sometime later, after first discussing the shy and awkward Peter Van Pels, she recognized a kinship with him, and the two entered a romance. She received her first kiss from him, but her infatuation with him began to wane, and she questioned whether her feelings for him were genuine or resulted from their shared confinement. Anne Frank formed a close bond with each of the helpers, and Otto Frank later recalled that she had anticipated their daily visits with impatient enthusiasm. He observed that Anne's closest friendship was with Pep Voskuhl, the young typist. The two of them often stood whispering in the corner. In her writing, Frank examined her relationship with the members of her family and the strong differences in each of their personalities. She considered herself to be closest emotionally to her father, who later commented, "I got on better with Anne than with Margot, who was more attached to her mother." The reason for that may have been that Margot rarely showed her feelings and didn't need as much support because she didn't suffer from mood swings as much as Anne did. The Frank sisters formed a closer relationship than had existed before they went into hiding. Although Anne sometimes expressed jealousy towards Margot, particularly when members of the household criticized Anne for lacking Margot's gentle and placid nature. As Anne began to mature, the sisters were able to confide in each other. In her entry of January 12, 1944, Frank wrote, "Margot's much nicer. She's not nearly as catty these days and is becoming a real friend. She no longer thinks of me as a little baby who doesn't count." Frank frequently wrote on her difficult relationship with her mother and of her ambivalence towards her. On November 7, 1942, she described her contempt for her mother and her inability to confront her with her carelessness, her sarcasm, and her hard-headedness before concluding, "She's not a mother to me." Later, as she revised her diary, Frank felt ashamed of her harsh attitude, writing, "Anne, is it really you who mentioned hate? Oh, Anne, how could you?" She came to understand that their differences resulted from misunderstandings that were as much as her fault as her mother's, and saw that she had added unnecessarily to her mother's sufferings. And with this realization, Frank began to treat her mother with a degree of tolerance and respect. The Frank sisters each hoped to return to school as soon as they were able and continued with their studies while in hiding. Margot took a shorthand course by correspondence in Bet Boscule's name and received high marks. Most of Anne's time was spent reading and studying, and she regularly wrote and edited her diary entries. In addition to providing a narrative of events as they occurred, she wrote about her feelings, beliefs, dreams, and ambitions. Subjects she felt she could not discuss with anyone. As her confidence in her writing grew, and as she began to mature, she wrote of more abstract subjects, such as her belief in God and how she defined human nature. She even aspired to be a journalist. On the morning of August 4th, 1944, the Arcturus was stormed by a group of German uniformed police, Grun Police, led by SS Sergeant Karl Sillerbauer of the Sicherheitsdienst. The Franks, Van Pelsis, and Pfeffer were taken to RSHA headquarters, where they were interrogated and held overnight. On August 5th, they were transferred to the Huis van Bewaring, House of Detention, an overcrowded prison on the Weteringschans. 2 days later, they were transported to the Westerbork transit camp, through which, by that time, more than 100,000 Jews, mostly Dutch and German, had passed. Having been arrested in hiding, they were considered criminals and sent to the public punishment barracks for hard labor. Victor Kugler and Johannes Kleinmann were arrested and jailed at the penal camp for enemies of the regime at Amersfoort. Kleinmann was released after 7 weeks, but Kugler was held in various work camps until the wars ended. Miep Gies and Bet Voskuil were questioned and threatened by the security police, but not detained. They returned to the Arcturus the following day and found Anne's papers strewn on the floor. They collected them, as well as several photograph albums, and Gies resolved to return them to Anne after the war. On August 7, 1944, Gies attempted to facilitate the release of the prisoners by confronting Sillerbauer and offering him money to intervene, but he refused. Although there have been persistent claims of betrayal by an informant, the source of information that led the authorities to raid Arcturus has never been identified. Night watchman Martin Sliegers and an unidentified police officer investigated a burglary at the premises in April 1944 and came across the bookcase concealing the secret door. Tony Allers, a member of the National Socialist Movement in the Netherlands, was suspected of being the informant by Carol Ann Lee, biographer of Otto Frank. Another suspect is dockroom manager Willem van Maren. The annex occupants did not trust him, as he seemed inquisitive regarding people entering the stockroom after hours. He once unexpectedly asked the employees whether there had been previously a Mr. Frank at the office. Lena Hartog was suspected of being the informant by Anne's biographer, Melissa Mueller. Several of these suspects knew one another and might have worked in collaboration. While virtually everyone connected with the betrayal was interrogated after the war, no one was definitely identified as being the informant. In 2015, Flemish journalists Jérôme de Bruyne and Jute van Wyk, Bet Voskuil's youngest son, wrote a biography, Bet Voskuil, The Silence is Over, a biography of the youngest helper of the secret annex, in which they alleged that Bet's younger sister Nelly, 1923-2001, could have betrayed the Frank family. According to the book, Bep's sister Diney and her fiancé Bertus Hulsman recollected Nelly telephoning the Gestapo on the morning of August 4, 1944. Nelly had been critical of Bep and their father Johannes Voskuil for helping the Jews. Johannes was the only one who constructed the bookcase covering the entrance to the hiding place. Nelly was a Nazi collaborator between the ages of 19 and 23. Karl Sillerbauer, the SS officer who made the arrest, was reported to have said that the informer had been the voice of the young woman. In 2016, the Anne Frank House published a new research pointing to investigation over ration card fraud rather than betrayal as a possible explanation for the raid that led to the arrest of the Franks. The report stated that other activities in the building may have led authorities there, including activities of Frank's company. However, it did not rule out betrayal. On September 3, 1944, the group was deported on what would be the last transport from Westerbork to the Auschwitz concentration camp and arrived after a three-day journey on the same train as Bloem Evers Emden, an Amsterdam native who had befriended Margot and Anne in the Jewish Lyceum in 1941. Bloem saw Anne, Margot, and their mother regularly in Auschwitz and was interviewed for her remembrances of the Frank woman in Auschwitz in the television documentary The Last 7 Months of Anne Frank by Dutch filmmaker Willy Lindver on the BBC documentary Anne Frank Remembered. Upon arrival at Auschwitz, the SS forcibly split the men from the women and the children, and Otto Frank was separated from his family. Those deemed able to work were admitted into the camp, and those deemed unfit for labor were immediately killed. Of the 1,019 passengers, 549, including all the children younger than 15, were sent directly to the gas chambers. Anne Frank, who had turned 15 3 months earlier, was one of the youngest people spared from her transport. She was soon made aware that most people were gassed upon arrival and never learned that the entire group from the Achterwies had survived the selection. She reasoned that her father, in his mid-50s and not particularly robust, had been killed immediately after they were separated. With the other women and girls not selected for immediate death, Frank was forced to strip naked to be disinfected, had her head shaved, and was tattooed with an identifying number on her arm. By day, the women were used as slave labor, and Frank was forced to haul rocks and dig rolls of sod. By night, they were crammed into overcrowded barracks. Some witnesses later testified Frank became withdrawn and tearful when she saw children being led to the gas chambers. Others reported that more often she displayed strength and courage. Her gregarious and confident nature allowed her to obtain extra bread rations for her mother, sister, and herself. Disease was rampant, and before long, Frank's skin became badly infected by scabies. The Frank sisters were moved into an infirmary, which was in a state of constant darkness and infested with rats and mice. Edith Frank stopped eating, saving every morsel of food for her daughters, and passing her rations to them through a hole she made at the bottom of the infirmary wall. In October 1944, the Frank women were scheduled to join a transport to the Liebau labor camp in Upper Silesia. Bloem Evers Emden was scheduled to be on this transport, but Anne was prohibited from going because she had developed scabies, and her mother and sister opted to stay with her. Bloem went on without them. On October 28th, selections began for women to be relocated to Bergen-Belsen. More than 8,000 women, including Anne and Marco Frank and August van Pels, were transported. Edith Frank was left behind and died of starvation. Blitz one friend of Anne's described her as bald, emaciated, and shivering. She noted August van Pels was with Anne and Margot Frank and was caring for Margot, who was severely ill. Neither of them saw Margot as she was too weak to leave her bunk. Anne told her friend and another friend she believed her parents were dead, and for that reason she did not wish to live any longer. Goessler later estimated their meetings had taken place in late January or early February of 1945. In early 1945, a typhus epidemic spread through the camp, killing 17,000 prisoners. Other diseases, including typhoid fever, went rampant. Due to these chaotic conditions, it is not possible to determine the specific cause of Anne's death. However, there is evidence that she died from the epidemic. Gina Turgel, a survivor of Bergen-Belsen, knew Anne Frank at the camp. In 2015, Turgel told the British newspaper The Sun, "Her bed was around the corner from me. She was delirious, terrible, burning up," adding that she had brought Frank water to wash. Turgel, who worked in the camp hospital, said that the typhus epidemic at the camp took its terrible toll on the inmates. "The people were dying like flies, in the hundreds. Reports used to come in 500 people who died. 300, we said. Thank God, only 300. Witnesses later testified Margot fell from her bunk in her weakened state and was killed by the shock. Anne died a day after Margot. The exact dates of Margot's and Anne's death were not recorded. It was long thought that their deaths occurred only a few weeks before British soldiers liberated the camp on April 15, 1945, but research in 2015 indicated that they may have died as early as February. After the war, it was estimated that only 5,000 of the 107,000 Jews deported from the Netherlands between 1942 and 1944 survived. An estimated 30,000 Jews remained in the Netherlands, with many people aided by the Dutch underground. Approximately two-thirds of this group survived the war. Otto Frank survived his internment in Auschwitz. After the war ended, he returned to Amsterdam in June 1945, where he was sheltered by Jan and Miep Gies as he attempted to locate his family. He learned of the death of his wife, Edith, in Auschwitz, but remained hopeful that his daughters had survived. After several weeks, he discovered Margot and Anne had also died. He attempted to determine the fates of his daughter's friends and learned many had been murdered. Sam Letterman, often mentioned in Anne's diary, had been gassed along with her parents. Her sister, Barbara, a close friend of Margot's, had survived. Several of the Frank sisters' school friends had survived, as had the extended families of Otto and Edith Franks, as they had fled Germany during the mid-1930s with individual family members, settling in Switzerland, the United Kingdom, and the United States. Later on in her life, Otto Frank found Anne's diary when he went back to the annex, and after he found the diary, he knew that although Anne said many times in her diary she would never share it with anyone, she wanted to be a writer, and he felt that her dream should be recognized. So he made sure that the book was published as The Diary of a Young Girl, aka Anne Frank. And that's it. So thank you guys for listening. I had so much fun recording. I'll see you guys later. Bye.